Chapter 7. On the fourth day comes the astrologer from his crumbling old tower up the valley, where he had heard the news, I reckon. He had a private talk with us, and we told him what we could, for we were mightily in dread of him. He sat there studying and studying a while to himself. Then he asked, How many ducats did you say?
1107, sir.
Then he said, as if he were talking to himself, it is very singular. Yes. Very strange. A curious coincidence. Then he began to ask questions, and went over the whole ground from the beginning, we answering. By and by he said, 1106 ducats. It is a large sum.
7, said Seppi, correcting him.
Oh, 7, was it? Of course a ducat more or less isn't of consequence, but you said 1106 before. It would not have been safe for us to say he was mistaken, but we knew he was.
Nicholas said, we ask pardon for the mistake, but we meant to say 7.
Oh, it is no matter, lad. It was merely that I noticed the discrepancy. It is several days, and you cannot be expected to remember precisely. One is apt to be inexact, when there is no particular circumstance, to impress the count upon the memory.
But there was one, sir, said Seppi, eagerly.
What was it, my son? Asked the astrologer, indifferently. First, we all counted the piles of coin, each in turn, and all made it the same 1106. But I had slipped one out, for fun, when the count began, and now I slipped it back and said, I think there is a mistake, there are 1107, let us count again. ... we did, and of course I was right. They were astonished. Then I told how it came about. The astrologer asked us, if this was so, and we said it was.
That settles it, he said.
Know the thief now. Lads, the money was stolen. Then he went away, leaving us very much troubled, and wondering what he could mean. In about an hour we found out, for by that time it was all over the village, that Father Peter had been arrested for stealing a great sum of money from the astrologer. Everybody's tongue was loose and going. Many said it was not in Father Peter's character, and must be a mistake. But the others shook their heads, and said misery and want could drive a suffering man to almost anything. About one detail there were no differences. All agreed that Father Peter's account of how the money came into his hands was just about unbelievable. It had such an impossible look. They said it might have come into the astrologer's hands in some such way, but into Father Peter's, never. Our characters began to suffer now. We were Father Peter's only witnesses. How much did he probably pay us to back up his fantastic tale? People talked that kind of talk to us pretty freely and frankly, and were full of scoffings, when we begged them to believe really we had told only the truth. Our parents were harder on us than anyone else. Our fathers said we were disgracing our families, and they commanded us to purge ourselves of our lie, and there was no limit to their anger, when we continued to say we had spoken true. Our mothers cried over us, and begged us to give back our bribe, and get back our honest names, and save our families from shame, and come out and honorably confess. And at last we were so worried and harassed, that we tried to tell the whole thing, Satan and all, but no, it wouldn't come out. We were hoping, and longing all the time, that Satan would come and help us out of our trouble, but there was no sign of him. Within an hour after the astrologer's talk with us, Father Peter was in prison and the money sealed up, and in the hands of the officers of the law. The money was in a bag, and Solomon Isaacs said he had not touched it, since he had counted it. His oath was taken, that it was the same money, and that the amount was 1107 ducats. Father Peter claimed trial by the ecclesiastical court, but our other priest, Father Adolf, said an ecclesiastical court hadn't jurisdiction over a suspended priest. The bishop upheld him. That settled it. The case would go to trial in the civil court. The court would not sit for some time to come.
Wilhelm Niedeling would be Father Peter's lawyer, and do the best he could, of course, but he told us privately that a weak case on his side, and all the power and prejudice on the other made the outlook bad. So Margit's new happiness died a quick death. No friends came to condole with her, and none were expected. An unsigned note withdrew her invitation to the party. There would be no scholars to take lessons. How could she support herself? She could remain in the house, for the mortgage was paid off, though the government, and not poor Solomon Isaacs, had the mortgage money in its grip for the present. Old Ursula, who was cook, chambermaid, housekeeper, laundress, and everything else for Father Peter, and had been Margit's nurse in earlier years, said God would provide. But she said that from habit, for she was a good Christian. She meant to help in the providing, to make sure, if she could find a way. We boys wanted to go and see Margit and show friendliness for her, but our parents were afraid of offending the community, and wouldn't let us. The astrologer was going around inflaming everybody against Father Peter, and saying he was an abandoned thief, and had stolen 1,107 gold ducats from him. He said he knew he was a thief from that fact, for it was exactly the sum he had lost, and which Father Peter pretended he had found. In the afternoon of the fourth day after the catastrophe, old Ursula appeared at our house, and asked for some washing to do, and begged my mother to keep this secret, to save Margit's pride, who would stop this project, if she found it out. Yet Margit had not enough to eat, and was growing weak. Ursula was growing weak herself, and showed it, and she ate of the food that was offered her like a starving person, but could not be persuaded to carry any home, for Margit would not eat charity food. She took some clothes down to the stream to wash them, but we saw from the window that handling the bat was too much for her strength. So she was called back and a trifle of money offered her, which she was afraid to take lest Margit should suspect. Then she took it, saying she would explain that she found it in the road. To keep it from being a lion damning her soul, she got me to drop it while she watched. Then she went along by there and found it, and exclaimed with surprise and joy, and picked it up, and went her way. Like the rest of the village, she could tell every day lies fast enough, and without taking any precautions against fire and brimstone on their account. But this was a new kind of lie, and it had a dangerous look, because she hadn't had any practice in it. After a week's practice, it wouldn't have given her any trouble. It is the way we are made. I was in trouble, for how would Margit live? Ursula could not find a coin in the road every day, perhaps, not even a second one. And I was ashamed too, for not having been near Margit, and she so in need of friends. But that was my parents' fault, not mine, and I couldn't help it. I was walking along the path, feeling very downhearted, when a most cheery and tingling freshening up sensation went rippling through me, and I was too glad for any words, for I knew by that sign that Satan was by. I had noticed it before. Next moment he was alongside of me, and I was telling him all my trouble, and what had been happening to Margit and her uncle. While we were talking, we turned a curve, and saw old Ursula resting in the shade of a tree, and she had a lean stray kitten in her lap, and was petting it. I asked her where she got it, and she said it came out of the woods and followed her, and she said it probably hadn't any mother or any friends, and she was going to take it home and take care of it. Satan said, I understand you are very poor. Why do you want to add another mouth to feed? Why don't you give it to some rich person? Ursula bridled at this and said, perhaps you would like to have it. You must be rich, with your fine clothes and quality airs. Then she sniffed and said, give it to the rich, the idea. The rich don't care for anybody but themselves. It's only the poor that have feeling for the poor, and help them. The poor and God. God will provide for this kitten. What makes you think so? Ursula's eyes snapped with anger. Because I know it. She said. Odd, a sparrow falls to the ground without his seeing it. But it falls, just the same. What good is seeing it fall? Old Ursula's jaws worked, but she could not get any word out for the moment, she was so horrified. When she got her tongue, she stormed out, "Go about your business, you puppy, or I will take a stick to you." I could not speak, I was so scared. I knew that with his notions about the human race, Satan would consider it a matter of no consequence to strike her dead, there being plenty more, but my tongue stood still, I could give her no warning. But nothing happened. Satan remained tranquil and indifferent. I suppose he could not be insulted by Ursula any more than the king could be insulted by a tumble bug. The old woman jumped to her feet when she made her remark, and did it as briskly as a young girl. It had been many years since he had done the like of that. That was Satan's influence. He was a fresh breeze to the weak and the sick, wherever he came. His presence affected even the lean kitten, and it skipped to the ground, and began to chase a leaf. This surprised Ursula, and she stood looking at the creature and nodding her head wonderingly, her anger quite forgotten. "What's come over it?" she said. "While ago it could hardly walk." "You have not seen a kitten of that breed before," said Satan. Ursula was not proposing to be friendly with the mocking stranger, and she gave him an ungentle look, and retorted, "Colin, who asked you to come here and pester me, I'd like to know? And what do you know about what I've seen, and what I haven't seen?" "You haven't seen a kitten with the hair spines on its tongue pointing to the front, have you?" "No, nor you either." "Well, examine this one and see." Ursula was become pretty spry, but the kitten was spryer, and she could not catch it, and had to give it up. Then Satan said, "Give it a name, and maybe it will come." Ursula tried several names, but the kitten was not interested. "Call it Agnes. Try that." The creature answered to the name and came. Ursula examined its tongue. "Upon my word, it's true," she said. "Have not seen this kind of a cat before. Is it yours?" "No." "Then how did you know its name so pat?" "Because all cats of that breed are named Agnes. They will not answer to any other." Ursula was impressed. "He is the most wonderful thing." Then a shadow of trouble came into her face, for her superstitions were aroused, and she reluctantly put the creature down, saying, "Colin, I suppose I must let it go. I am not afraid, no, not exactly that, though the priest, well, I've heard people, indeed, many people, and, besides, it is quite well now, and can take care of itself." She sighed, and turned to go, murmuring, "Colin, it is such a pretty one too, and would be such company, and the house is so sad and lonesome these troubled days. Miss Marget, so mournful and just a shadow, and the old master shut up in jail." "It seems a pity not to keep it," said Satan. Ursula turned quickly, just as if she were hoping someone would encourage her. "Why?" she asked, wistfully. "Because this breed brings luck." "Does it? Is it true? Young man, do you know it to be true? How does it bring luck?" "Well, it brings money, anyway." Ursula looked disappointed. "Money? A cat bring money? The idea! You could never sell it here. People do not buy cats here. One can't even give them away." She turned to go. "I don't mean sell it. I mean have an income from it. This kind is called the lucky cat. Its owner finds 4 silver groschen in his pocket every morning." I saw the indignation rising in the old woman's face. She was insulted. This boy was making fun of her. That was her thought. She thrust her hands into her pockets, and straightened up to give him a piece of her mind. Her temper was all up, and hot. Her mouth came open, and let out 3 words of a bitter sentence. Then it fell silent, and the anger in her face turned to surprise, or wonder, or fear, or something, and she slowly brought out her hands from her pockets, and opened them, and held them so. In one was my piece of money, in the other lay 4 silver groschen. She gazed a little while, perhaps to see if the groschen would vanish away, then she said, fervently, It's true, it's true, and I'm ashamed and beg forgiveness, O dear master and benefactor. And she ran to Satan, and kissed his hand, over and over again, according to the Austrian custom. In her heart she probably believed it was a witch cat, and an agent of the devil, but no matter, it was all the more certain to be able to keep its contract, and furnish a daily good living for the family, for in matters of finance even the piousest of our peasants would have more confidence in an arrangement with the devil than with an archangel. Ursula started homeward, with Agnes in her arms, and I said I wished I had her privilege of seeing Marget. Then I caught my breath, for we were there. There in the parlor, and Marget standing looking at us, astonished. She was feeble and pale, but I knew that those conditions would not last in Satan's atmosphere, and it turned out so. I introduced Satan, that is, Philip Traum, and we sat down and talked. There was no constraint. We were simple folk, in our village, and when a stranger was a pleasant person we were soon friends. Marget wondered how we got in without her hearing us. Traum said the door was open, and we walked in and waited until she should turn around and greet us. This was not true. No door was open. We entered through the walls or the roof, or down the chimney, or somehow. But no matter what Satan wished a person to believe, the person was sure to believe, and so Marget was quite satisfied with that explanation. And then the main part of her mind was on Traum, anyway. She couldn't keep her eyes off him, he was so beautiful. That gratified me, and made me proud. I hoped he would show off some, but he didn't. He seemed only interested in being friendly and telling lies. He said he was an orphan. That made Marget pity him. The water came into her eyes. He said he had never known his mama. She passed away while he was a young thing, and said his papa was in shattered health, and had no property to speak of, in fact, none of any earthly value, but he had an uncle in business down in the tropics, and he was very well off, and had a monopoly, and it was from this uncle that he drew his support. The very mention of a kind uncle was enough to remind Marget of her own, and her eyes filled again. She said she hoped their two uncles would meet someday. It made me shudder. Philip said he hoped so too, and that made me shudder again. Maybe they will, said Marget. Oh, your uncle travel much? Oh yes, he goes all about. He has business everywhere. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.